When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If you want interesting and entertaining debate on the Premier League and other English leagues, but from a show that doesn't take itself too seriously, then check out The Whistleblowers. It's a weekly football podcast hosted by me. I used to play football, Martin Gritton, stand-up Mark Smith when he can, and music manager Gareth Dobson, who always has plenty of good chat, being a Spurs fan. We basically get football writers in to have a chat as well, and we talk about the stories that matter in English football, whether it's on the pitch or off it. It's free to listen to iTunes, Acast, Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Or you can download the Whistleblowers app. Follow us on Twitter at Football Podcast. Cheers.
Hello and welcome to Footballistically Arsenal. I am Boyd Hilton. Psychic Josh is there. He's gone away for the weekend. Well, he's gone away for the night to Ascot. But he's still doing the podcast because he's dedicated. Hi, Josh.
Yeah. Hi. I must admit, had we not won yesterday at Old Trafford, had I not been thinking of all those times I've gone up the M1, sat in that away end and felt like we've been robbed, or we've given away a crap penalty, or we've come away with a defeat, then maybe I'd have asked someone to step in tonight. But, and I remember it really well in 2006. It was a day before I started university. So I'd gone up to Leeds, dumped all my stuff at university, gone across to Manchester to watch Adebayor nick a late winner. And to think that was the last time we won at Old Trafford is incredible. So I had to be here for this joyous occasion.
Beautiful. So you were there the last time we won away at Old Trafford. Amazing. Go on.
Well, we have to say that, you know, no one was there yesterday, Boyd, so I will still be in that select group of people.
Yeah. Well, there were some hacks. Roy Keane was there, big time. We'll get on to that later. The other reason, of course, you're doing the podcast, because we've got our favourite guest with us, Alex Brooker of The Last Leg fame. Hi, Alex, from his Huddersfield lair.
Yeah.
Which we all saw on Friday night on the show, on The Last Leg, where you had to do it. Why did you have to do it from there? Explain.
Because I came into contact with someone who tested positive for COVID. So, I've got to self-isolate for like 2 weeks now. Well, I'm out. I keep talking about the fact I'm out a week on Tuesday is when I'm allowed out again. But at the same time, I ain't got nowhere to go a week on Tuesday now. So I've just kind of just started my lockdown a few days earlier than everyone else. I've been able to ease into it since last week, so...
But filming is fine, isn't it? The TV industry is exempt, so you can resume your normal, presumably, Last Leg studio appearances.
Once I'm in the clear from the self isolation. Yeah, if they'll have me, although I'll tell you what, the robot, they put my head on the robot on Friday, and that was a lot funnier than most of the stuff I normally do on there. So I just.
Not true. But I would have to say, they stitched you up. They fucking stitched you up by putting a dummy in a Spurs shirt. I don't know if everyone saw it, under your face. But you brilliantly riposted by. Did you, first of all, did you handwrite shit and an arrow in a few seconds live on the show?
I wrote shit. I just kind of looked at the screen and I thought, I had some paper. I wrote it on the back of the script.
Oh, brilliant.
So I wrote shit and a little arrow. Yeah. which I was very happy. I very rarely watch bits of the show back, but I watched that bit back just to see how it looked on screen, make sure I got it all lined up okay.
It was so, very good. Very good thinking on your part.
Very happy with that. Yeah. I did not like seeing that Spurs shirt underneath me.
No, that was a disgrace. More importantly, so we've got the fact that we won at Old Trafford the first time since 2006. The first time we've beaten a Big Six team. Sorry, 2000. What did I say? 2000. Is that right? 2006.
No, you're right. 2006.
First time we've beaten a big Six team away for 47 years, and the first time Aubameyang scored in quite a few games. It's a load of firsts, Josh.
Yeah, it was Man City in January 2015, I believe. I was in the away end at that one as well. And to think it's been as long as it has been. And there's been so many moments where we've come so close. I think about the trip to Wembley when we played against Spurs in the league game as well, where we really should have won that. And there's been so many other occasions. And just to have that monkey off the back. And you could see at the end where Aubameyang was asked about it. And like the players know, right? I mean, even players that were not there for the first couple of years of this period, they know. So just psychologically, to just, especially maybe all the more so coming off a defeat where we were, arguably on paper have lost at home to Leicester, then it just puts the belief back in there so quickly. And that's quite exciting.
Oh, completely. But Alex, what do you think? Because it's interesting, isn't it? If you think about it, like we played brilliantly, generally, but we won the game basically because fucking Pogba had a little nibble at Hector, which he didn't need to do.
No,
and we got a penalty.
He absolutely didn't. I think on the whole, like, I was so impressed with us yesterday, just the attitude from the off. We really got at them. And it's the sort of thing that you want straight away. And it was kind of first half, it felt like it was going to be a case of the usual again, where we've kind of created chances, missed them. Certainly after Leicester the other week, and we went in at half-time 0-0, should have been well ahead, and ended up losing in the game. I'm sure that must have been playing on some of their minds. And the fact that we kind of, it was a penalty. And, I'm still slightly concerned that we miss, a few chances and we weren't that clinical. But I tell you what, it would do them the world of good because they deserved it. I'm not being overly optimistic when I think that probably last week, if the early goal was given, we'd have probably beat Leicester. I don't think we'd have lost that game.
Agreed.
Yeah. And, this week, the rub of the green, it was a penalty. I was just so surprised. Like, this year, so much has surprised me, but Mike Dean giving us a penalty at Old Trafford is one of the most... Even then, when it was a stonewall, I thought, he ain't giving that. And then when he didn't give Gabriel the second yellow card, which, again, I thought he was going to. It was like he'd been visited by three ghosts in the night. It's like he's a different guy, and he was just, he was at one point, he was even smiling at El Neni, and it's just like, what has happened? Have you ever seen The Grinch when his heart grows bigger at the end? It's like the end of that film. It was like, what's going on?
It did feel like, I felt like years and years of Mike Dean unfairness, grotesque displays. I mean, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, and I never think, but Mike Dean is the one, isn't he, that we're all like, oh, fucking, as soon as you hear Mike Dean is refereeing one of our games, particularly against like a team like Man United, you're like, oh my God. But it was incredible.
There was a couple of challenges even early on that he let go. Like, yeah. I thought Holden was going to get booked before he did as well. And there was a couple of challenges where early on he kind of let the game go. And there's a few, like, the other week in the Europa League against Dundalk, and even the game when we played away. Who was it we played in the first game in Europa the other day? The first group game.
Vienna.
So even the game against Vienna and Dundalk, like, the referees were really like kind of pernickety, weren't they? Yeah. Everything was kind of being blown up for a foul. And it was nice to see Ding kind of let it go. And, it worked against us as well. United got a chance when McTominay went right through, I think it was Lacazette, early in the second half. So, do you know what? It was, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I didn't really have any complaints about him.
No,
but it was definitely a penalty. It's 100%.
It was 100% penalty, yeah. There's no dim that. But it was, you did get a classic moment of Mike Dean, like, demonstrative action, didn't you? With the photo of him pointing at the spot, like, gesticulating wildly. He's still a massive drama queen, isn't he? He loves it. He loves the attention.
Yeah, even when the ball hit him, and we were on a break and he kind of stopped the play to give that back. It was like, normally I'd have thought he would have gone, stop moaning. Stop your whinging.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But Josh, I'm just going to ask to start going back to the team selection. If you, if like me, when the team selection comes out, I always look at the Twitter reaction, and particularly his choice of Elneny, and holding, just generally, like, people were like, oh, it seemed a bit too defensive. People were moaning. People were complaining that Xhaka was being dropped, which I find quite funny, and Ceballos being dropped. But the Elneny in particular, that Elneny selection just proved to be a complete triumph, doesn't it? You have to give him, Arteta, so much credit for that, don't you? Because he was just brilliant. He was so hardworking. You know, the videos of him, that right at the end, Arsenal put out a clip in the 91st minute of him running around like a wild man, stopping every attack, like single-handedly, like Superman or something.
You have to give huge credit, because you've got a situation there where it, for all extents and purposes, looked like Elneny's time at Arsenal, you know, was done. But Arteta wasn't part of that decision process to, you know, ensure that he was left the club. So for him to come back, and he's played a role, you know, around the team. And, you know, Xhaka has been playing in different positions, hasn't he? We've seen him be part of even a back three. And Arteta's obviously been bold. He had a game plan. And Elneny was at the absolute heart of it. I mean, would we have believed that 6 months ago we'd be sitting here talking about Elneny being a man of the match away at Old Trafford in a Premier League game? It seems like we're in, you know, 2020 has been a weird year, but that is up there, isn't it? Yeah. It's incredible, to him to come back.
Do you think that with Elneny and Partey, it was brilliant as well? Yeah. But it was with the pair of them, they just seem to they move it quicker.
Yes,
and like, I know there's always this big criticism of Xhaka because he's sideways and Ceballos, and they kind of slow things down a bit. But yesterday, even when we had possession of the ball, Elneny and Partey were so, they move the ball a lot quicker. Their movements seem to be, they're just both a lot quicker. And I think that really helped us. And
oh, completely, yeah.
It's one of those things. I remember I was at the City game when we won in January 2015. Was that one? Yeah. I was at that game, and I remember that was when Coquelin played an absolute blinder, wasn't it? And it was he kind of played his way into importance within the team. And I think for Elneny, that certainly, you know, if he can maintain those standards, I really, you know, there's no reason why he should be dropped. And
because he wasn't only like defensive, but there was also at one point in the middle of the second half, don't remember, when Martin Tyler, there was a bit of commentary that where Martin Tyler's going, Elneny driving Arsenal forward. It was like, I never thought in a million years, like, you know, a year ago, if you'd ever hear that line in a commentary, extraordinary that he's back. And that he was really, as you say, he was athletic and pacey and just much more proactive, I think, than Xhaka. And even Ceballos. I mean, Ceballos has got his pluses, hasn't he? But I think the two of them, him and Xhaka, are slow, aren't they? I feel like pace is not a thing that either of them have. But Partey and Elneny feels like it could be the future. Are we getting carried away? I don't know. But at least we've got this option now in midfield, haven't we? A completely different option.
I think it's been quite a few times, haven't there? You know, not least obviously when Xhaka was being booed off the pitch, where we've thought, you know, is Xhaka's role in this team going to diminish? And he seems to find a way back into it. So I can't help but think, despite what Elneny's done here, I'm not sure that he remains a fixture in the team. You know, how are you going to set up away at Man United in a game where it felt very important to take something from yesterday's game? I'm not sure he's necessarily going to mean that Elneny gets a place back in a regular Premier League team. But he has been a strange, figure around Arsenal. He's had five seasons where he's been in and around the club, never played in more than 14 Premier League games for us. And he's just constantly in, out the team, come on 15, 20 minutes. So to see a complete 90 minutes like that was brilliant. And, you know, credit to Arteta. But boy, are you worried that we're all getting like too excited? Like, if people were too down after Leicester, are we too excited? Do we have to be realistic that this is, you know, Man United were not very impressive?
I mean, there is that. Yeah, I mean, we have to acknowledge that. Yeah, so there is that was that discussion, wasn't there, which I alluded to, the Roy Keane, Tim Cahill discussion, which was hilarious. Because first of all, like Roy, at half time, I we were very positive about how well we played, but there was the fact that we hadn't scored and we hadn't taken advantage of our superiority. And Roy Keane was hailing us at half time. He was like, "Oh, we played brilliantly." He was really, I don't even remember. It was almost like, and then at full time, he was much more massively down on Man United and not being quite reluctant to give us much credit, whereas Tim Cahill was banging on about what brilliant job Arteta did in that game and has been doing. And they're mates, obviously. I know they're mates. So there was that brilliant tete-a-tete between them. But Alex, I don't think I'm getting carried away. I just think when this is such a historic moment, when you've gone this long without winning at particularly Man United and generally at a top six team, and when we played so well generally all round the pitch, even like players like Lacazette, who you could fault for, like, you know, losing possession every now and then and not scoring and all that, but he did so much incredible hard work, didn't he, in the middle of the field, coming, dropping back and all of that. Just generally, and Partey being brilliant. And tactically, you have to give the manager a huge amount of credit, don't you? So I think it's fine to get a little bit carried away.
It's not the same in any game. You know, it's like we lost to Leicester last week. Was it that, you know, people go, well, is it all down to Leicester being brilliant or is it a bit down to us being shit? And it was, you know, it was a bit of both, wasn't it? So, you know, yesterday I kind of looked at it and I was so happy with the way that I just felt that we were started to control. We controlled the game. There was a couple of moments where, you know, early on, I know Greenwood had a shot that was saved, but then apart from that, we kind of really did control it. And I think that's a big thing for us. There's so many games I've seen where we're losing it. We've lost it in the middle. And I felt that yesterday we really controlled it. You know, I thought that Gabriel, even though, I mean, he may have got a second yellow card on another day if the referee was being harsher, but he was superb. And I felt like, kind of, you know, we talk about Arsenal in terms of a spine. We haven't had a spine of a team for so long. And that was the big thing I took from yesterday is I feel that actually for once in the transfer window, we've properly bought ourselves a half-decent spine. You know, Gabriel's a really good centre-half. Partey's brilliant. And I think that these are real kind of causes for optimism. As I said, you know, the one thing you would say is, I mean, still clearly for us sometimes going forward, I still think it's not fully clicking. You know, I know that he kind of says about Aubameyang, you know, should be able to, you know, you're getting good positions from the left anyway. But at the same time, I always look at it and think I'd rather he was down the middle every single time. But clearly, you know, Arteta didn't fancy playing Pepe in a big game like that, which I think says a lot.
I think the one player for me that had, I don't think had a great game would be Willian. Like in the first half, Albinho put up a stat saying he'd given the ball away like 12 times. So he'd been robbed of the ball about 12 times. He had a kind of wild shot, which, oh, he clipped the bar, didn't it? To be fair, clipped the bar. But I'm not a huge fan of Willian. I'd rather Pepe. I think the one change I'd make would be Pepe in for him. And I think
the one thing that Willian does, which I think is why he's kind of getting in over Pepe, is he just, again, his pressing's really good.
Yeah, his pressing.
He does work quite hard. Yeah. And it's a weird thing because with Lacazette as well, it's the same at the moment. Lacazette isn't, taking as many chances as what we'd like and things like that. And I mean, in fairness, him yesterday, I mean, it did take a little, like, it took a nick off Lindelof, that air shot he did. I saw everyone on Twitter going, fucking Lacazette. Textbook Lacazette. And it's like, he was that, you know, they did take it out of his path a little bit, in fairness. And I feel like Lacazette is sacrificing a lot for work for the team as the unit. But then I feel like Aubameyang's doing that as well from the left.
Yeah.
So
yeah, completely.
I feel that slightly, I think it will click for us eventually, though. I think they'll get the right formula. They'll get there. And Willian's not a terrible player. Arteta said the other week, didn't he, that he's not, you know, he's had a couple of difficult games and he's not really kind of been at it. And you'd hope that would come.
Yeah, I think the competition between Willian and Pepe is very close. Like, I almost felt like Willian was, his delivery from corners was as bad as Pepe's was in the previous game. And it was like, and he was being robbed of the ball as much as Pepe was. It was almost like a competition between the two of them who can quite not actually see.
It's mad what's going on with the corners with us, by the way.
Oh my God.
I've never seen us consistently so bad with so many corners.
And Bellerin throwing, another Bellerin foul throw.
It's like, if just spend like Surely, I highly doubt Arteta's not getting him to spend time on corners the training ground. It just seems to be the one bit that they're not taking away. And yeah, Bellerin's foul throws, they're infuriating. Stop doing it.
Unbelievable. Josh, go on.
No, I mean, what you've got now, right? I'll just take some notes here. There's like no question in my head now about, let's say, seven of our starting 11 in Wee's game, right? And I think, you know, Alex alluded to it as we're talking about this spine, but you've got Leno. I say Bellerin is doing enough there where you just think he starts if he's fit. Gabriel, Tierney, Partey, Saka, and Aubameyang. And then it is just going to be this midfield, like what goes on and who is it Lacazette, Pepe, Willian? But that, it's quite encouraging. And also for two of those players to have been so new into the club. And I don't know, look, Roy Keane was talking, wasn't he, a little bit about comparisons to Patrick Vieira. Martin Keown was incredibly positive about him after, you know, some of the performances that he's been giving as well. But to have two players come in who are now just, I don't know, like we all seem to be agreeing should be in our starting 11, had such an impact, is hugely encouraging. And I'm trying to remember, like, I'm as excited about Partey as I've been about any new signing, I think, this quickly. Right? Like Aubameyang, maybe? Yeah. I don't know. Like, this is exciting.
Yeah, well, Roy Keane did say, he literally, that he has got what it takes to be the new Patrick Vieira, which I consider to be, you know...
I think Roy Keane, though, I think there was a moment where he forgot he was Roy Keane and then he had to remember he's Roy Keane and he's not allowed to be... It's like I said to you, I tweeted you yesterday, boy, didn't I? And it was like, he's 100% the sort of bloke who would be given, like, a picture from his kids that they've done for Father's Day and he'd tell them that they've, you know, it's not good enough. That's just not the quality I expect from you. He's that sort of guy.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of moments. I did that thing with Cahill was quite funny. He was like, you're acting like they're Bayern Munich. And there was another bit that really made me laugh about when he criticised the players, or Aubameyang, for referring to Arteta as Mikel. And he was like, it's to respect him. It's gaffer, boss, like, you know, but Mikel. And at that moment, he even did break. He broke into a smile that Jamie Redknapp picked up on. And sometimes I think he becomes like a little bit of a parody of himself sometimes. And sometimes I think he does it for effect. But it's nice to see people kind of, you know, talking about us positively. I mean, yes, I'll be honest with you. I was very surprised that I thought United would be a lot better second half. And for the first 10 minutes of the second half, they were a little bit better. But Christ, after that, it was just, I was so surprised at the end of the game that their whole thing was lump it long to Maguire and like at the back post and stuff like that. And
Exactly. But I think Cahill had a good point, which was, he was making the point, wasn't he? That, which I think, the problem is, to some extent, the manager. I just don't think he is good enough. I don't think he's smart enough. I don't think he's inspirational enough. And they're so variable, Man United, that, you know, and I think Chelsea is a bit the same with Frank Lampard as well. I don't think either of those managers are going to be as consistently impactful and clever as our manager.
But I think, you know, I looked at yesterday and, okay, for as bad as United were, it's like we really did put them under pressure when they had the ball. The pressing was superb. And, you know, a while ago when we got beat by Liverpool at Anfield, I mean, that was as good as I've seen Liverpool play for, like, as good as Liverpool are. It was like they were unreal. And we just, no matter what we did, we just didn't have any time on the ball. And, yeah, OK, we weren't fully at it as much as you like. But at the end of the day, you go, you have to give credit to Liverpool. And I felt that kind of, you know, we put ourselves to a higher standard yesterday. And that to me is cause for optimism. The amount of games that have passed us by, you know, the amount of times I've seen, you know, I know he's kind of out on loan, but, you know, I'd seen the ball pass Guendouzi by and would they bypass our midfield so easily. Oh, it was insane.
Yeah. That was a transformation. Nuts. Yeah. We're playing through the middle yesterday for the first time in like months, weren't we? Yeah. Which obviously is down to...
And look, I do think we're missing someone with a slight killer final pass. Yeah, look, like pretend I don't think we are, but the rest of it seems to be getting there. And
Partey's passing is pretty brilliant, isn't it? He had one or two like long balls which were brilliantly accurate. I mean, I think he's kind of more creative than I think in that Vieira sense. That he's incredibly powerful and he can tackle and all of that. But actually, he can also launch a pretty fucking good pass as well. So I just think he's a bit of an all-round triumph.
Yeah, no, I'll be honest. I'll look at us, you know, last week against Leicester, as I said, that game, you know, I felt that it was ours for the taking. We didn't take the chances that we had and, you know, we should have had a goal. And, you know, even Man City away, I still felt that, you know, we had a couple of decent chances. And that, again, you probably could have got a draw there.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I don't feel like, you know, I know everyone's going, you've lost three games. But to me, the two of the three that we've lost, I felt.
Yeah, Roy Keane was going on and on about that.
Gone slightly the other way. And it does feel like the days are going and getting humped.
Yes, might we don't
actually
look
be
like
over.
That is key, isn't it? We never look. We're the only team in the whole league now, bearing in mind those incredible like multi-goal defeats that Liverpool have had and City had. We've got the best defence in the league, and we're the only team that looks like we're not susceptible. I mean, you know, obviously I'm saying this, and probably this weekend we'll probably be thumped 5-0 or something. But Josh, right now, the whole idea that Arteta has established this very, very solid setup, albeit maybe it is to some degree the expense of creativity, but fucking hell, years and years and years, every time anyone wins the league, it's proven that a defence comes first. And that's what he's doing. I think we have to hail that. I mean, I know people are going to say we're getting carried away, but I think that is a massive achievement.
It is a massive achievement. And you've got situations where he's had to change the pairings or the three so regularly, and yet he's managed to make us the team that have let in least Premier League goals. And you saw it with the game yesterday. Rob Holding was rumoured that he would struggle to make the game, barely trained. They found a way to get him in. And, you know, he was really excellent. You know, of course, Gabriel was excellent. Elneny was excellent. So he's not going to be, you know, contender possibly for man of the match. But, you know, what was terrific. And if he is able to, you know, make us as solid as this without, you know, with having to chop and change the team, and we've had David Luiz has been in and out, Xhaka's been, you know, dropping in and out. I think it was interesting to go with a Rob Holding where he wasn't obviously 100% ahead of Mustafi. That probably gives us an idea of what's going on there. And, you know, we also have other defenders, you know, who are out injured at the minute to come back, Pablo Mari. So I don't know. It'd be interesting exactly what he does. But, yeah, to be, what are we now, 7 games in, conceded 7 goals. When you look at the fixtures we've had to go to at Liverpool, at City and at United, you'd have probably grabbed that. And now we've just got to, you know, look forward to, in theory, a run of games where, you know,
this is a big test for us now, for all the optimism, you know, to string a few results together. Because I said, we have had 3 defeats this season. So it's kind of been stop, start, stop, start. You know, if they can go on from this and win a few on the bounce, then I think that's but that'll be the real test. If they go and lose another one in a couple of games and stuff like that, then you're like, it's going to be a lot of a harder kind of road back. But I think everyone's behind him. I think the players are buying into it. This is the difference. You know, I've watched us in the last couple of years and I've just thought, I've got no idea what we're trying to do. And I don't think the players do either. Whereas now I do feel that certainly everyone's kind of bought into it. And those who don't play.
Completely. Sorry, Josh, yeah, what were you going to say?
No, I just, either of you a bit worried about, like, what would we be like if we had, like, a in-form version of Lacazette or alternative, and if we could re-spend £72 million on a player going forward who would just come in and be flying? Then, it doesn't, like, we'd almost be, like, contenders, wouldn't we? We're now at a point where that front seven, as it were, the goalie, defensive midfield, we know what we're doing. But I think our pitfall this year is going to be whether or not we make top four is going to be what happens, you know, going forward, definitely.
And, you know, but we wouldn't be, you know, people talk about getting worried about Tottenham because Tottenham put a few results together and scored a few goals and they stuck a load past United. But, you know, obviously I'm extremely biased, but it's, you know, I don't see us being that far off of that standard, like, you know, really. And I think that if we get a few results together, you'll soon start seeing us. You know, I think we'll probably get closer to the kind of the top two of the table, and then who knows? You know, I've not really thought a great deal of like City this year. I don't think they're particularly amazing. I don't think United are any up to much. Tottenham are like a decent enough, but again, yesterday that you know they could have easily, you know, drawn that game.
Brighton were robbed of a penalty yesterday. Tottenham, the whole Harry Kane, you know, that this fucking annoying thing he's doing with his bending down when someone tries to beat him in the air. And just, I think you make a really good point about our rivals, because, you know, people look at that Tottenham attack and then look at Son and Kane, you know, and Gareth Bale coming on. I know he scored, but they only had three shots on target yesterday against Brighton at home. And we had, I think, three shots on target against Man United away. There isn't, as you say, and in theory, as Josh says, we've got Lacazette not in particularly great form, certainly when it comes to scoring, and Willian slash Pepe, who are, you know, we're not sure which of them is going to come up with a good. So, yeah, I agree. I think only Liverpool, really, already top of the league, you know, with all their injuries, have any kind of consistent form. And even they lost a huge pay.
I was watching the Premier League years randomly from last season, and the goal that Lacazette scored at home to Tottenham, where he kind of took a touch and absolutely rifled it home. And, you know, that he hasn't really been... We're talking about not being on fine, great form. He hasn't been for ages.
No.
Yeah. He hasn't really... But at the moment, he is putting a lot of work in for the team. And, as you know, I've got no problems with Nketiah, but if it's a choice, I'd still rather... You know, Lacazette started out of the two. I just sometimes wish. You know, I don't know whether eventually he might end up going with Saka, Aubameyang, and Willian. I don't know.
Who would be your front three? Who would you pick as your ideal front three?
Well, it would be Saka, Aubameyang, Willian probably. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, that's Willian could get into form. You know, and as I said, you know, Pepe scored a brilliant goal against Sheffield United, and even the other day against Dundalk, he scored world class goal on his right foot. And he's one of those players who's so frustrating. And sadly, at the moment, I don't think we can afford to have players who dip in and out. And I don't think Arteta has got kind of, you know, patience for that. He needs people who can function within the team, and I think he looks at it, and no matter what we kind of say about Lacazette, he does a role within the team. You know, at the very least, he's properly closing down and stuff like that. As frustrating as it is sometimes, because his hold up play isn't great, I must say.
Yeah. Sometimes. We'll talk more about the game. We'll talk more about upcoming games. I want to ask about the Ozil tweeting situation. And more after this break.
If you want an e-bike that doesn't look like it's made for the shopping precinct, something that's less Mr. Bean and more Steve McQueen, check out the range of bikes from London-based Cooler King. From dope 250-watt city bikes to Harley Bobber-inspired 750-watt beasts that can tear your face off while leaving your smile intact. Cooler Kings are made in limited numbers, yet highly affordable. Check them out now on the web at cooler.bike or find them on Instagram with hashtag CoolerKingBike. Cooler.bike. E-bikes that are cool AF.
And we're back from the break. In the weekly Ozil slot, we should acknowledge the fact that he's now live tweeting every game. And today, I don't know if you saw, Alex, that he tweeted out a poll about the US presidential election.
Did he?
Yeah. Yeah. If you look, Jesus Christ. Yeah, he's like...
What was it, just a straightforward
Trump, who would you like to win?
Yeah, Biden,
Trump.
Who's the man of the match?
Yeah, who's going to be man of the match? Biden
or Trump?
Did he
do a prediction as well?
No, he hasn't done a prediction.
Who he thinks the goal scorers are going to be? wow, exactly. He's really Yeah.
Did you vote on the poll just so you could see what Mesut Ozil's audience was thinking?
Do you know what? I didn't. Go on, and.
Well, what do you reckon? What do you reckon? Mesut Ozil's fan base, he's had nearly 180,000 votes. What do you reckon? What percentage Biden, what percentage Trump?
This is very interesting. Right. I'm glad you asked this. I'm going to guess. I'm going to guess Biden ahead about 66% to Trump's 33, 34%.
I'd have thought it was different. I'd have thought because they're little fanboy helmets that follow Ozil. Yeah. All these little wankers have got umlauts in their fucking username. So I think that I'd probably suggest that they're the sort who go Trump by about 60-40. What was it? Josh, this is a good game.
Boyd, you're extraordinarily close. It was 67.4% Biden.
Amazing.
So you know Mesut Ozil's following remarkably well.
Do you know why? I think Trump is regarded generally by Muslims around the world as being a massive bigot racist.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that bit.
Yeah. It's not like you're on a topical weekly news entertainment program.
We've got a US election special on Friday.
Yeah,
at least I'll be able to provide something. Like, I'll tell you what, you did call this. Mesut Ozil's fans. So they called it on Twitter on Monday.
Can't wait for that. Does that mean you have to stay up all night tomorrow and watch it?
That's it, balls. Absolutely not. I don't want to get away from football too much, but when they asked me the other week what I thought about the US election, my reaction in the meeting was, couldn't give a shit. We've got enough going on here. I'm not going to start getting upset by what's going on over there. And the analogy I used was, I'm not going to watch the couple over the road having a row in the street if I'm also sleeping in the spare room. And it kind of made sense, but doesn't really. But that was my attitude. But
that is brilliant. Now you've got like a 2-hour election special on Friday. What do you make of the general Ozil tweeting situation?
I think that he's clearly, obviously, he's got a social media company that runs it for him. I'm obsessed with kind of the stuff that's gone on with him, with offering to pay Gunnarsson's wages, to pay Jerry's wages, and all of that stuff. It got really messy, didn't it, for a while there. And it does. The only thing that frustrates me sometimes is with it is the fact that, regardless of what you think on the situation, it's like, he tweets sometimes when he was left out of the squad. They tweeted as if he just found out, as if he had no. He's like, oh, I'm so disappointed. I've been working so hard in training. It's like he knew. He's known for a long, long time that that's him done. That's what they tried. They tried to get rid of him.
Yeah.
He knows full well he was never going to be in those squads. He chose to stay, and that is well within his prerogative. And that's not me giving an opinion on the situation, but that's what he chose to do. So it's like, don't act like you're surprised all of a sudden when you get dropped from all the squads, because you bloody knew you would. I think that they kind of played to a certain audience, but it was weird when he first started tweeting, or someone started tweeting for him during the games. It's slightly odd.
Yeah. I just feel like Josh, he's just kind of keeping this fan base as happy. As Alex calls them, the umlaut named idiots who are
all of them, of course.
Yeah, but for whom it is definitely Ozil FC rather than Arsenal FC. They're much more interested in him than they are the club, aren't they? And he's just kind of keeping them happy with this non-stop tweeting. It's quite, in a way, it's quite sweet, but equally it's a bit embarrassing as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's embarrassing for everyone involved. I mean, there is something quite interesting about a footballer that doesn't play football. I think it'd be a good documentary. I wonder if anyone is just like following him like this season, like one of the world's most famous football names who has to go into training every day, presumably, otherwise he'll be fined. So if he does want his wages, he has to at least turn up for work effectively.
Yeah, he's often in the background of those, like, or anyway, if you watch Aubameyang's Instagram videos, he's often like in the background looking quite happy. Like, you know, that kind of.
Yeah, he's doing his weights, putting that up on his Twitter. He has to do training. And it's not like being injured where you know psychologically, you're going to be back involved at some point. Like, this is the end. The contract is up and he's not in the squad. It's such a peculiar situation for us to have arrived in. It would be. I suspect it would. It would rival. Was it rival Amazon Prime's efforts of covering Spurs? Do you think? Just would you want to be covering Boyd, a documentary on Ozil between now and the end of the season?
I think Alex is right. It would be fascinating to have a documentary about him, though. There would be a lot of playing that computer game, wouldn't there? What's the one he's obsessed with? Fortnite, isn't he? He's a huge Fortnite obsessive.
Well, he's got time on his hands, isn't he? So he's like, yeah, I mean, he's got loads of time to play. You should try and get him on the pod.
Oh, I'd love to get him on the pod. No one has yet asked him. I know I go on about this a little bit, and people slag me off. I get a lot of shit when I mention this, but I'm going to mention it again because he's got his whole charity thing going on and the whole. And he was brilliant about mentioning the Uyghur Muslims in China, etc. But he's got this friendship with Erdogan, who is an absolute ruthless. Populist dictator, effectively. And his best man at his wedding wasn't just at his wedding. He was fucking his best man. He was his best man at the wedding. And no one, as far as I can make out, I know that I didn't need to put the fucking in the middle of that. But no one, as far as
he
I can make out,
was his best man at the wedding.
Somebody
should have filmed the speech. God knows what that would have been like. If you're worried about your Laugh usual best man cracking gags, blimey.
But no one, I've never seen him. I've been asked about that. I've seen that, like, I think Ornstein interviewed him at one point and kind of just a bit almost referred to it, but didn't really get a proper questioning about it. I'd love to see someone. So for me, it's worth making this fucking documentary that we're fantasizing about just to have him pinned down about that. And I've been told on Twitter by people saying, oh, it's cultural. And, you know, he has to support the president of his country, of his, you know, ethnic origin. So I'm saying, no, he doesn't. I mean, that's just not true. You know, he doesn't have to have his best man. You know, not every footballer of the same ethnic origin has Erdogan as their best man. Only Ozil, as far as I'm aware. Anyway, we'll move on from that controversial topic, except Josh wants to say something. Go on.
Well, no, there was an article I did see on the Mail Online today that he had joined like a venture capital fund, and there was some very generic statement from him talking about sort of planning for life after football while remaining actively in football. So he was very clearly not retiring. But, you know, potentially making some plans there for life after football.
Yeah.
Such a weird situation. It's such a messy situation that we've kind of found ourselves in with it. It's the sort of thing where, you know, people kind of say, well, the Arsenal way of doing things is kind of done and dusted, but it's just messy from both sides. You know, the stuff when he started offering to pay wages and stuff like that, it was done purely to piss off the club. And, you know, it was just stuff like that. It just got so messy.
Yeah.
I mean, the most surreal one of all, I think, was when Arsenal put out a tweet about our German midfielder has been busy on social media tonight. I've lost track of who's trolling who now. Do we know it's embarrassing, so we're making it equally embarrassing? Like, what is going on here? Briefly, obviously, we got the sad news, really, about a new national lockdown. And it feels like this ballot that we went into as season ticket holders just becomes ever more, unnecessary.
I forgot about that. I'm glad I gave him back the 200 something quid to go into the ballot.
450 quid I want back.
Jesus.
Arsenal making a huge amount of interest on our money, Alex.
I've forgotten that.
And isn't it, they're having a meeting, I believe, Premier League having a meeting about this fucking 1495 scandal per game, pay-per-view. And I think one of the clubs is saying, we've got to, the season ticket holders like us who've paid good money already on kind of for our season tickets with the hope that we get to go to, we're being totally ripped off having to pay 15 quid to watch our game.
I think that's what Celtic and Rangers have done. I'm sure Kevin Bridges told me the other week when he was on Last Leg that they get access to all of their games as kind of, I'm sure that's what, I don't know whether he paid extra, but I know he's a Celtic season ticket holder and they kind of, you access them all.
Yeah.
All of the ones that aren't on telly through the site.
And what is interesting is obviously clubs are like Arsenal online media is what it is. I think I think they would probably admit they don't spend fortunes in terms of the style. It's green screen. It's quite straightforward. They don't have A-listers on there, with all the respect in the world. A lot of clubs have really now invested money in their like match day programming that they're doing to give the fans something additional. And like, I love Adrian Clarke. We love having him on. But it is funny that it's still like Arsenal Football Club, and it's like Adrian at home, and that's what, you know, they are delivering to their worldwide audience when we cannot be in the stadium. I'm just a bit surprised they haven't, you know, tried to up the game. And do you know what? Put your hand in the pocket. Let's make sure Wrighty is with there for one game. We have an hour and it's fans. You know, a bit more that they could possibly be doing during this sort of strange period that I've seen other clubs have been doing.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Yeah, it's a shame. But I think the real scandal is the pay-per-view. And our next game, our next home game on Sunday is on that annoying Sunday evening slot.
Villa, innit?
Villa at home, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean that shouldn't be a pay-per-view game at all. People are saying, "Oh, it's only the shit games," but that's a massive game, you know. With and it's fucking disgrace. I'm sorry, it makes me really angry.
But is 7:15 after putting the kids to bed, Alex? Is that a good or a bad time? Because 4:30, I can imagine, is quite a difficult one on a Sunday.
Actually, do you know what? On last Sunday when we played Leicester, my youngest, it was kind of their bath time, so I managed to get out of doing that. But my youngest walked in and asked me who I was shouting at, and it was Alex. She didn't know who Alex Lacazette was, but she does now. So, but yeah, it's an okay time. It gets me out of stuff. But,
oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, but it is like the pay-per-view thing is a bit much. That was the one good thing about the first lockdown. When it came back and you had like all of the football. Oh, it was just like, just consume all of the football kind of gets you through it.
Yeah, exactly.
Alex, did you pay for our game that was on pay-per-view, and are you going to pay on Sunday?
Did I balls and am I balls? Absolutely no. No, I'm not.
You are not.
I know people that go, he's on telly, he's being tight. It's a principle. It's a principle.
Yeah.
Also, my mate sent me a really good streaming website now, which is half decent. So.
Streams are doing a fucking blinder of business, aren't they?
It's the first one in years. It's like it's on the money every time. So.
Oh, that's good. I get them free, so I'm all right. Jack.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Boyd, I forgot about this perk that you have.
It's a massive perk. Oh, yeah.
They send round some sort of crisps and nuts for you to enjoy while you're watching your free pay-per-view.
I won't go that far. Although I have got so many freebie boxes for like shows this, because all pub PRs, TV PRs have got to do at the moment is organise gift boxes for their shows. So in the hope that TV journalists, you know, promote them. So I've done I've got loads of them, Truth Seekers and...
You got Mandalorian one the
Mandalorian,
other day. I was jealous of that one.
Yeah,
by the way, if you are after crisps and whatnot, I've just done a little advert for McCoy's Mucho. It's a different chocolate tortilla. So very just nice. To let you.
Brilliant. And my mate just sent me, he's just done an ad for like some kind of excellent like Bramble gin or something. I'm looking forward to some bottles of that.
Just let you know, guys.
Yes, Josh.
No, I was going to say send the McCoys down, definitely. I was actually doing a bit of work with Ray Parlin. We were in one of these sort of one of the big PR companies offices on the week of the Tottenham documentary being done. I couldn't believe these boxes. I'm like, who are they being sent to? They're TV journalists. I mean, these were. Did you get one? Did you get one of the Tottenham Amazon Prime boxes?
I didn't, only because I told them that I wasn't going to go to their press day because I couldn't bear being in the vicinity of Tottenham. So, I shot myself in the foot there.
Just on all or nothing, I found it really interesting the amount of people are like, how can you even sit and watch that? They're like, how can you sit and watch hours of television about Tottenham? And it's like, well... I'll watch a documentary on Netflix about some geezer in America who killed his kids. It doesn't mean like I'm a child killer. Do you know what I mean? It's just
Jose Mourinho, pretty much. Yeah,
it's just, you know, I'll watch a documentary, you know, about pedos, but it's not. Doesn't mean I have to be into it.
No. I'm glad you made that clear. But you're right, I watched it as well. Oh, yeah, I did watch it. I didn't go to the press day, but I did watch it, and it was fascinating.
It was great. Pretty fascinating.
We should mention, obviously, we haven't really spoken about the Dundalk, and I don't know there's huge amounts to say other than what Alex mentioned about the brilliant goal, you have to say, from Pepe. But for 40 minutes, it wasn't too inspiring. But 2 out of 2 in Europe. What I am hoping is that if we are, let's say, through after, you know, 4 games pretty much, then, you know, to give a load of, you know, young players. Because this season, more than ever, we are going to have to like rotate, right? And if we could just know that in that game 5 and 6 in the Europa League, we're going to have a bit of breathing space when we've got league games, you know, coming thick and fast.
Well, he made a lot of changes, didn't he, on Thursday? Yeah. Like Willock played and actually played quite well, albeit against not amazing opposition, with all due respect to Dundalk, you know, I was obsessed with their goalkeeper. He just kept looking. He looked like a landlord at your local. He had that look about him, and I was obsessed with him. But yeah, like Willock played well. He wasn't even in the squad yesterday, was he? No. And everyone was like, a few people were saying Willock's got a start because he kind of, you know, he'd had such a good game on Thursday. Yeah. And you know, I think that we've got options there, and there's players coming back. You know, Smith Rowe and people. You know, Chambers is back in full training now, isn't he? And he's going to need games. And you know, I personally don't mind seeing. You know, I tell you what, no goalkeeper will ever have an easier debut than Rennison in that game.
Oh, I know. There were two interesting things about that game. One was the goal was incredible, wasn't it? And what he did with his foot, with his boot over the ball and all of that was kind of like magic, wasn't it, from Pepe, showing you what he can do if he's capable of it. His technique can be spectacular, albeit he was very frustrating in the first half, you know, with his wayward deliveries and all of that. But then Dundalk did not commit one foul, did they? Which was pretty incredible. Arsenal
They didn't have one given.
Given, exactly. That's what I mean. Yeah, officially.
Officially they didn't commit one foul. There was quite a few there where I was just like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. There was another interesting thing, Josh, which was that at the end of the game, Arteta's post-match interview, even against Dundalk, the thing he was most proud of that he said was how organised and solid Arsenal were. And I think that's so interesting. I think that is, again, you know, to reiterate the point, whatever team he picks, they're used to this formation now and they're used to these tactics. So he tweaked it a little bit. He tweaks it a bit. But no matter which players are playing, they all know what they're supposed to be doing. And I think that is so, so important. You know, even against Dundalk, he takes it seriously. And and people are complaining, oh, even against Dundalk, people are saying, oh, we shouldn't have played five at the back. I know the co-commentator was saying that, you know, why are we playing that formation even against Dundalk? Well, I think that's what you want. I think that's what I want from our manager right at the moment, is consistently sticking to it. And the creativity will then hopefully come.
Yeah, you know, he had a system. I think I agree with you. The co-commentator, I can't remember who it was, but then even Jake Humphrey at halftime was pushing this, rather negative, like, oh, for 40 minutes, Arsenal couldn't break them down, as if it was like the hugest upset in world football. But, you know, ultimately, it's rare these games end up like 6-7-8-0, right? Like, to get to halftime, be a couple of goals up and, you know, get a goal early.
Karen Carney, who's good,
Who I really like. I think he's brilliant, actually. Who I really like, but I think they were just a little bit tough because Dundalk had so many people behind the ball. I mean, it was, you know, 8-9 people behind the ball, and that is hard to break down. But yeah, their goalie is 39, right? I mean, incredible. Yeah, I know we've got to wrap up, but what did you think about this Peter Cech potentially being the fourth choice goalkeeper? You know, coming out, registering to be in a Premier League. I mean, could you believe Peter Cech is in a Premier League squad and Mesut Ozil isn't? You know, what have we arrived at?
Mate, it's 2020. It's madness. But do you know what, though? Knowing Peter Cech, I bet you he's still keeping himself fit. And worst comes to worst, you'd still have him. I tell you what, speaking of goalkeepers, City had Scott Carson on the bench the other day. I've completely forgotten about him. And then he ends up on the bench for City at the weekend. And I was just like, what is going on?
Yeah, incredible.
If Edison gets injured, Scott Carson's going to come on. And it was just like,
brilliantly entertaining. I think Kepa is it's brilliantly entertaining how absolutely shit he is and how expensive he was and how they do not trust him in any way whatsoever. That's why we ended up with the Czech situation. I think it's
just with Premier League goalkeepers at the moment, like, I know Everton Chant took Pickford the other day. And it's like, I really do think that Villa got a decent deal for Martinez.
Oh, great deal, yeah.
Like, and you know, I think they'll look and go, you know, he's pretty solid, isn't he? So
definitely. Before we do our climactic predictions for the next two games, I just have to ask you, Alex, if you read the Wenger book.
I haven't read the Wenger book yet. My brother bought it for me, but I haven't read it yet. It's hard now because obviously I'm going to start it. But all I've heard is like people going, oh, he doesn't really give away enough, and it's kind of like it's a tough. Is this like CBB story time?
Josh is showing us his copy.
The kids are downstairs. Let me put this on speaker if we're going to read a bit, because I can get out the story now.
I mean, to be honest, Alex, they'll fall asleep very quickly if you start reading them this book.
Well, basically, I have come away for a couple of days, so I brought it with me, and I was just reading a little bit by the pool earlier. And I mean, I know the bar wasn't sent so high because I've read all the reviews of people like saying it wasn't great. But if I can just read for 30 seconds here, I have another memory that is a good illustration of this hoping for victory. I would often spend hours in the fields with a farmer who let me work alongside him or who would take a rest while I gave him a hand. His name was Adolf Kotcher. We talked football. We discussed the team's disappointing results. We went back over the match. One day, he claims he was a brilliant player himself and that with him on board, the team was going to dazzle, that we'd be victorious at last. You'll see, kid. I'll play in the next match. I spent the following few days waiting for the next match, imagining how he would play, dreaming of the goals he'd score. But he had lied to me. He didn't play in the next match. And I'm on page 29. It hasn't got a whole lot better, but I'm hopeful for the next couple of hundred pages.
What's interesting is that I was talking when I've read it and when the book came out, I was saying how my initial excitement just at the final arrival of the Arsene Wenger book slightly kind of, you know, I was almost too positive about it. But because it is pretty boring and pretty dull, as that excerpt will prove. But it's doing really well. It's selling very, very well. It's number two in the Sunday Times bestseller list. It's beating like huge, big stars. Like Piers Morgan and Philip Schofield and all the big celebrity biographies. It's basically the biggest selling celebrity autobiography of the season at the currently as it stands, because it's only beaten by another kind of runaway bestseller. So the risk, the gamble from the publisher that even though Arsene Wenger is not revealing anything hardly of interest at all in this fucking book, it doesn't matter because all Arsenal fans are buying it. And you know,
I know everyone said, one thing you know about him is he's a class act, and he never kind of rose the debate with Mourinho. And he was, why would he now suddenly do it in a book? But I honestly believe that, I don't know, given the amount of hassle that he had towards the end of his tenure at Arsenal, I honestly thought that if there was, I don't know, that, you know, there were times when I've always thought it can't have all just been down to him. There must have been stuff going on behind the scenes and things like that. And I honestly thought that would probably be the sort of thing that's kind of comes out in the book, a bit of honesty about some of the deals we missed out on, whose fault it was and stuff like that. And it's just...
He touches on some of those things a little bit, but in a very much you have to read between the lines situation. So there are moments where it kind of like alludes to... Like, you know, people's reasons why certain deals didn't happen, but it is frustrating.
You've got to bear in mind that all football books autobiographies are kind of judged by the standard of Roy Keane's when he openly admitted deliberately doing Alfie Garland. And it's, you know, when I read that, when I just finished school, it's one of the most astonishing things I've ever read.
That is incredible.
Level of openness you don't really get these days.
Unbelievable, yeah. Unbelievable admission, yeah. Right, now we're running out of time. Got to do predictions quickly. So we've got Mold at home in the Europa on Thursday and Villa at home in the league on Sunday. Two predictions each. Josh, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I think we will win both of these matches, boys. I am in buoyant mood after the victory at Old Trafford. I think we can win 2-0 and then we will go and win 2-1 at Villa Park. That's what I'm going for. What about you, Alex?
It's at home. It's at home. Let go.
You are entirely correct, boys. Yes.
You don't need to change your prediction.
With my 2-1.
Okay. Yeah. Alex?
2-1. 2-0 and 2-1.
Excellent.
I think that we'll probably do Mulder 3-1, and then I think we'll beat Villa 2-0.
Nice. I'm going to go for a big 4-1 against Mulder, and... I might go for 3-1 against Villa. I've gone crazy. I've gone way too optimistic.
Seven goals in a week.
Seven goals. I don't know where the fact they're going to come from. Yeah, I've gone bottom mad. Yeah, I don't know. Alex, it's been brilliant. Everyone should watch you on the last leg election special on Friday.
Yeah, no, I've been doing my research. So, yeah, Friday, 10 o'clock, an hour and a half special on US election with your US politics.
And we may or may not know who the next president's going to be. We may not even know. I mean,
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be a real toughie for the show if we don't.
Yeah,
I'll be honest with you. You know, probably if I was you, tune into the first. If there's no result, tune into the first 45 minutes because God knows what we'll do for the last for the second half.
Can't wait. And Josh, thank you very much in Ascot.
Yes, you're very welcome. Alex, please get in about what Mesut Ozil's fans predicted. Just get it involved. Just go, well, I did see the 67%.
Yeah, because everyone always talks Ozil's about the fans. Polls. Everyone talks about the polls, but who's ahead? I'm going to be like, well, according to the polls I've seen, Mesut Ozil on Twitter, Biden should have won this comfortably. So,
absolutely. Well, hopefully by this time next week, there'll be a proper human being as president of the United States is my final observation. Thanks, Alex. Thanks, Josh. Bye.
Wasn't that a great podcast? Now, if you've got 90 seconds spare in your day, come and listen to ours. It's called What Has He Said Now? And is available wherever you got this podcast.
You're going to lose a number of people to the flu.
This is a Playback Media production. To listen to all our football podcasts, visit playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.